This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. In today's episode, I'll be discussing Victor Wembanyama and the San Antonio Spurs' last four games, CJ Sissoko getting some minutes, and the draft lottery race going into the final weekend of the regular season. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode. How's it going, everyone? It's been about a week since I last did a Spurs Cast episode with Colin Reed. The team has gone through four games, so let's jump right into these four games for the San Antonio Spurs, and specifically mention what Victor Wembanyama has doing out there on the floor. So let's go back to last Friday. The Spurs are on the road at New Orleans. They get a two-point win in a game where the Pelicans were favored by 11.5. The Pelicans led early in this game by 15 points. The Spurs did make a comeback, though, in the fourth, and then they held on in crunch time and, you know, outmaneuvered New Orleans there. CJ McCollum had 31 points for the Pelicans, and Zion Williamson was out for New Orleans in this game due to injury, as was Brandon Ingram. However, the Spurs were dealing with their own injuries as well. They were down. They were without Devin Vassell, Keldon Johnson, Jetty Osman, Jeremy Sochan, all due to injuries. But they did have Victor Wembanyama, and he made a clear difference here in helping the Spurs get the win. So Wemby on this night in New Orleans finishes with 17 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists to just 2 turnovers. Did a really good job there moving the ball for San Antonio, along with 3 blocks as well. Some other players who played pretty well for San Antonio were Devontae Graham with 20 points off the bench. He made 4 three-pointers in this game. And then also 3 players scored 15 points in this game for San Antonio. That was Sandro Mamukelashvili, Zach Collins, and also Julian Champagny. And you're going to hear Champagny's name mentioned here a few times. Then let's go to two nights later. The Spurs are at home. I'm hosting the Philadelphia 76ers on Sunday in San Antonio. They end up losing this game by 7, but in double overtime is what it takes for Philly to beat San Antonio. It goes to double overtime. Both teams, this game kind of was like a seesaw. One team led by double digits first, and then another team came back and led by double digits. So both teams did build a double-digit lead at some points in this ball game. But then in the fourth, it got really close and went down to the wire. End of regulation comes. The teams go to the first overtime. Nobody can pull away from each other. And then, of course, the second overtime comes. And then the Spurs, in those last final 2.5 minutes, they did have some difficulties. They're kind of their youth and inexperience showed. And they had some turnovers. And then Philly went on a little run there. And by the time they were down 7, San Antonio, and it was pretty much over from there. So Philly did hold on for that win. In double overtime. This is a really good game for Tyrese Maxey. He ends up with a career-high 52 points in this game. And then Wemby also set some career highs as well. He ends up going for 33 points, 18 rebounds, 7 blocks, 6 assists to 9 turnovers. This is a little bit of a difficult night for Wemby in the turnover department, which was a career high, unfortunately, for him. But he also logged 43 minutes, which was also a career high for him with having to go to double overtime and playing a lot of minutes there. So Wemby has another, spectacular night filling the stat sheet there. And then also Malachi Branham had a good game for San Antonio here with 22 points. And then again, Julian Champagny's name is mentioned there with 17 points. And also Trey Jones had 17 points there for San Antonio. So what is it? 1-1 so far from these first two games. Then on Tuesday, the Spurs are on the road in Memphis, who were missing. The Grizzlies were without 13 players. And so the Spurs end up getting a very comfortable win here by 15 points, where Wemby didn't really have to play at all in the fourth quarter. They just got a nice, comfortable win. San Antonio did, despite being down four key rotation players as well. So the way this game went was the Spurs did trail early by 14. Memphis kind of caught them off guard a little bit. But then the third quarter came and San Antonio absolutely demolished Memphis. They scored 29 points and held the Grizzlies to just 12 points in the third quarter. That helped the Spurs get a double-digit lead. And they ended up pulling away there in the third and fourth quarter. Wemby had a spectacular night again here. 18 points, 7 rebounds, 7 blocks. And then he did a great job, considering that, as I just mentioned, in the previous game, he ends up with a career-high 9 turnovers. Well, in this game, he does a great job of moving the ball and taking care of the ball, which is 6 assists to 1 turnover. So again, just 1 turnover for Wemby. But let me tell you one number there that's very interesting that I mentioned there. The 7 blocks. So, Wemby's had 7 blocks multiple times this year already. That's just a big accomplishment in itself of a player getting 7 blocks in a game. But here's what's unique about these 7 blocks for Wemby in this night against Memphis. Again, I'm going to go back to what I said there. The Grizzlies were down 13 players due to injury. So that meant that they only had 8 players available, 8 active players available. Wemby had 7 blocks on 7 of the 8 players in this game. Again, Every Memphis player who logged minutes on this night on Tuesday got blocked, except one player was spared, Jack White. So he was the only Grizzlies player who logged minutes that did not get blocked against Wemby. So that was, again, I don't know the research, like if that's ever happened in a game or how often it's happened that one player in one night can block almost an entire team that played in one game. And that's actually what Victor did there. I've been posting this on my Twitter. If you want to go check it out, I cut a little clip here of all seven blocks that he had. And again, I even had I usually read the box score right after the game. And I kind of just like start typing the players. And I didn't even realize that this happened. It wasn't until the following day. I mean, I had already put the tweet out that Wemby had seven blocks and this is who he blocked, blah, blah, blah. But then the next day, somebody on Twitter mentioned to me, hey, did you realize that like he blocked every Memphis player except Jack White? And I was like, no way. And then so then I went back and rewatched the clips. And of course, I edited the clips and put them online. And sure enough, yes, he gets seven different players that he blocked there in that game. So again, that was just one of those rare, like, wow, that's the kind of thing Wemby can do here is block seven different players on a team. Considering that they only played eight players. So again, that's what stood out to me from that Grizzlies game. And also, I would also say some quotes from the Grizzlies. What's his name? GG Jackson had a very insightful quote here where he kind of opened up a little bit about how competitive Wemby is in a game. So he kind of recalled a memory from the Spurs' game against San Antonio. I mean, not the Spurs' game, the Grizzlies' game in San Antonio. Here is his quote, and I'll definitely project this for the visual. He said, GG Jackson, when we played them in San Antonio, he blocked my shot back into my hands. I wrapped around and gave it to Dejan Giroux. He's so high in the air, so when he talks trash, it sounds like he's whispering. He was like, go back up, go, go. You scared? You scared? You scared? So I had to remind him of that. You said I was scared. Again, I want to read part of that quote there. He's so high in the air. This is Wemby. So when he talks trash, it sounds like he's whispering. So that was just more so one of those firsthand accounts from a player, an opposing player, of just what it's like. But when you see one of the sides of Victor's competitiveness, how, you know, when he's out there on the floor, you know, he's there to win and basically, you know, defeat you no matter what, I mean, try to beat you in any kind of way possible there. And so that was a very insightful quote from GG Jackson, just a unique quote, I would say, too. Just, you know, I know a lot of people retweeted that when I tweeted out and it was a, you know, a lot of people were kind of just like laughing at just the fact that like Wemby, you know, it's just how much trash he talks out there on the court sometimes, you know, and he's very competitive is what you can see. He has a fire in him. The Grizzlies, also some other players from them. Jackson also had a quote where he basically said that, you know, he thinks that Wemby will become one of the greatest players to play the game or one of the best defensive players to play the game when it's all said and done for his career. Brandon Clark, who has been injured for most of the season, got to see Wemby for the first time on Tuesday, and he just mentioned about how he hasn't played a player with Wemby's type of build, just the unique skill set that he has out there on the floor, and that was something that Clark mentioned. And then Taylor Jenkins, the Grizzlies head coach, before the game even started, had a long response about Victor, and basically said that you know the Spurs, yes, they might have 20 wins right now this season, but this is over. Like every going forward, he says that the Spurs are going to have great teams going forward because of Victor, and you know every now going forward, you know the Grizzlies are going to have a very tough matchup against San Antonio for the fact that they have to play Wemby four times a year in the regular season. And then, of course, if they ever meet in the playoffs, that'll be a matchup as well. So, again, the Grizzlies players and coaches did provide some insightful quotes on Victor on this night on Tuesday. And then Julian Champagny here also had another good game here with 17 points. So Champagny's definitely stepped up here with multiple rotation players out, having some good score nights for San Antonio. And then we're not going to spend too much time on the final game of this stretch that we're talking about, these four games, because the Spurs did get blown out in OKC. There's a big reason for that. Of course, as I mentioned, they're down currently four key rotation players. But then to add to the injury list, Victor was also out at OKC on the second night of back-to-back. The Spurs sat out with right ankle injury management is what the team said was the injury for Victor. And so it was a tough night for the players that did play in OKC. You know, the Thunder came out up 11-0. They ended up going up by as many as 42 points. They ended up winning by 38 points. I mean, this game was over pretty early, so I won't spend a lot of time on that game. And then the next player I do want to talk about is rookie, another rookie on the Spurs who we don't get talk too much about because he hasn't really played with San Antonio, and that's Sidy Sissoko, who was drafted in the second round by the Spurs. And so he has gotten a good run here in these last two games. Again, He played a lot of minutes against Memphis on Tuesday, and then with the Spurs missing multiple players, he got a good stretch run there also against OKC. But we do want to comment on that OKC game, that most of that game was a blowout. The Spurs were down by 30 plus points throughout the majority of that game. But I just want to talk a little bit about what I've seen from CeeDee in his last two games, should I say. So here right now he's averaging 25 minutes a night, scoring 12 points per game right now in these last two games. Getting to the free throw line, we see him being very aggressive. 4.5 free throw attempts, 4 rebounds, and then part of those 4 rebounds is just his ability. He does a good job right now, from what we've seen early on, in crashing the offensive glass. He's averaging 2.5 offensive rebounds in these last two games, and then also his ball movement is something that we kind of knew that he had in him, that skill set. And he's averaging right now 2.5 assists to 0 turnovers in these last two games. And then I went back and watched a little bit of film on him, and these are just some things that I really noted from him in these last two games that have been interesting to me. He does a really good job of cutting off the ball. So he's really good about when his defender who's guarding him, on the weak side, is not really paying attention to him. He's more so focused on the ball. CeeDee's done a great job of getting some of his easy dunks and layups, just attacking when that player is not focused on him. I know that Sean Elliott drew up a clip like that in the I think it was the Thunder game or the Grizzlies game. But CeeDee has done that on multiple attempts where he's got two-handed dunks. It's because his defender's not really focused on him, and then he quickly makes either a backdoor cut or he kind of cuts from the arc and gets in there. And his first teammates do move the ball pretty well, so of course they found him on those cuts for different finishing moves there. I already mentioned crashing the glass. One thing I also noticed that he does is he really moves the ball quickly. He's one of those players who it almost looks like he's anticipating where his next pass is going. So as soon as the ball gets to his hands, he's moving it quickly, whether it's across the three-point line, whether he's kind of in the post area and pushing it back out to three. That's one thing I noted. He also had a very a highlight kind of play where he was driving in, he draws in two defenders, and he does a right hand behind the back pass to Zach Collins, and then Collins finished that play for a dunk as well. So again, those are just some quick little insights on CeeDee Sissoko in the few minutes that he's been given here in these last two games. And I think that because of the Spurs' injury situation to a lot of their key wing players and guards, we are going to see him here in these final two games against Denver and also Detroit. So again, it's just some time to see CeeDee here and what he's been doing.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, so now for the final topic of this episode, I do want to discuss the lottery race scenarios for the Spurs, because right now, Thursday evening that I am recording, 6 p.m. Mountain Time, the Spurs are tied with Charlotte for the same record at 20-60, which means they're both tied for that third worst record, which of course you want to, and when it comes to the lottery, you do want to finish with the worst record there, or be like in that position, that bottom position, one of those bottom three teams to have the best chance at getting the number one pick, or at least the top four pick. And so they're currently tied with Charlotte at 20-60. And then a team that's kind of lurking right there with Charlotte and San Antonio is the Portland Trailblazers. The Blazers do play tonight on Thursday evening, so by the time that you may listen to this episode, they may have already played their opponent, which is the Golden State Warriors in Golden State. And so that could be part of their record might be updated by the time you hear this, depending on if they beat the Warriors or they lose to the Warriors. So again, right now they're 21-58 before playing the Warriors. So what I want to do is I kind of want to just go through some scenarios for these three teams and just talk about some of the outcomes that could happen by the end of this weekend when all three teams finish out their season before the playoffs start next week, which of course we know these three teams are eliminated from playoff contention. So like I said, the Spurs and Hornets are tied right now at 20-60. There's different paths where they could basically finish out with the same record, or there's a chance too that Portland could possibly tie them, and there could be a three-way tie to end the season here. So here's just the opponents that each team has, and what I think should happen on paper for these games, and then where I think that these teams will finish in the lottery. I mean, in the records order that will, of course, impact when the lottery begins here. So right now, Charlotte, their final two games are going to be at Boston and at Cleveland. You would think that, on paper, these are two losses for Charlotte. So right now, I do project Charlotte to finish out the season 0-2, which would be a 20-62 record, to have the third worst record. The Spurs have Denver on Friday and then the Detroit Pistons on Sunday. So here, I think the Spurs are going to, again, on paper, you would expect them to lose to Denver, but then on paper, you expect them to beat Detroit. So here, I think the Spurs go 1-1 in their final two games, which means that if they were to win one of these next two games, they would finish with the record of 21-61, which gives them the fourth worst record. So they would. So again, if Charlotte goes 0-2, San Antonio goes 1-1, then the Spurs finish with the fourth worst record. The Trailblazers, like I said, they have Golden State on Thursday night, then they have Houston and at Sacramento to end the season. So with them, it's a little bit harder to tell. I would say, again, I think that Golden State and then the Kings are going to definitely try to win their games against the Blazers, because they're trying to jostle for kind of playoff positioning or playing positioning here. Whereas the Rockets, they've already been eliminated from the playoffs. They are a better team than Portland, but again, I don't know if they're going to sit some of their players out, some of their key players out in their final few games. So I see Portland right now going either, finishing out either 22-60, maybe beating who is it, Houston possibly, or going 0-3, which would mean they end up at 21-61. So again, there's a scenario in play where the Spurs, Hornets and Blazers could all end up with 21-61 records, which would be a three-way tie. So now what I want to do is I went through the NBA lottery guide from last year, from before the lottery took place. And I went through and just kind of looked at some of the rules for what happens when two teams have the same record and, how do they get ordered before going into the lottery. And so if it's a two-way tie, so let's just say it's Spurs and Hornets or Spurs and Blazers. If it's a two-way tie, then it is decided by a random drawing, which is, code for a coin flip. And this happened last year. If we want to think about last year, the Spurs and Rockets finished with identical records of 22-60. When the random drawing took place in mid-April, the Rockets ended up winning that coin toss. And so the Rockets on paper had the second worst record, and the Spurs had the third worst record. Now we know, of course, if you finish with the bottom three record, it doesn't matter. You're going to have the best chance. You're going to have the best odds of getting the number one pick. Those odds, 1, 2, and 3 worst records are all the same there for the top four pick and for the number one overall pick. So again, if that's the case, what happens in a two-way tie? If it's a three-way tie, it's also a random drawing. So the way this would work is the team that wins this random drawing out of the three teams gets the worst record there. Then it's the second team and then third team. So basically the best way to explain this is last year we had a scenario where Miami, Golden State, and the Clippers all finished with records of 44-38. So then they went into a three-way tie. They did the random drawing, and Miami won, I guess, against those two teams in that random drawing. And so Miami had got the better pick. Then it was the Warriors who had second. So they got the second best pick, their option there. And then it was the Clippers there, up third there. So again, that's kind of the scenario right now. Again, that's just going into this final weekend. There's a chance that the Spurs could either end up in a two-way tie with Charlotte and Portland, or there's a chance that there could possibly be a three-way tie, or, somebody bottoms out and one of these other two teams wins. Well, then somebody gets, it might just go in order 3, 4, 5, just like that. So again, that's just kind of what I wanted to do there, was explain, kind of dive into what the lottery race scenarios do look like in this final weekend of the regular season before the playoffs begin next week. And then just regarding why sometimes this order is important is because just looking at your odds and your percentages of where you land. So again, there's an importance for where you finish your record, whether you have the third worst record, fourth worst record, or fifth worst record. And so I'm going to kind of explain that a little bit. So again, if you end up with the third worst record going into the lottery, then you have a chance of landing pick 1 through 7. 7 is very unlikely, but your best, so some of your top chances here are 14% chance for number one, and then a 52% chance for a top four pick. If you're in the fourth worst record category, then your pick can land anywhere from 1 through 8. 8th is very unlikely. Now your number one odd, getting the number one pick odds is reduced by 1%, about a 13% chance of getting number one, and a 48% chance of getting top four. So again, reduces by 4%. And then if you have the fifth worst record going into the lottery, your pick can land anywhere from 1 through 9, which a ninth is very unlikely to happen in that scenario. But you have an 11% chance now of getting number one, which is reduced by 2% from the other one, and then a 42% chance of just landing a top four pick. So again, that's why if you're trying to get one of the best picks in the lottery, then you do want to try to have one of the worst records, at least especially try to aim for third worst record. Now, before we close this out, I do want to talk also look at the scenarios for the Toronto Raptors, because the Spurs could potentially have their pick as well in the lottery, just depending on how the results shake out. So I want to kind of explain that as well. So right now the Raptors are sixth right now. They have the sixth worst record, should I say? So they're 25-55. Then the Memphis Grizzlies are right behind them at 27-53. They have the seventh worst record. Both teams have played 80 games, so they have two games left. For Toronto, they have at Miami and at Miami to finish out their season. Memphis has the Lakers and the Nuggets to finish out their season. So basically, there's also a chance that, these two teams could end up in a tie, but I don't think that it will happen. It would be very difficult for this to happen, because in order for the two teams to end up with the tied record, Toronto would have to win out, go 2-0, while Memphis would have to, Memphis would have to win out, and then Toronto would have to win out. And that, again, it's just very difficult to see these two teams tying. But let me just tell you, I just want to explain one last time, too, though, about where the Raptors sit and at sixth worst record, and where that's possibly where they're going to finish, and why that's actually kind of good news for San Antonio, because the Spurs still have a pretty good chance of retaining the Raptors' first-round pick. And here's why. If the Raptors end up with the sixth worst record, their best odds to land where they're going to land in the lottery are 30% chance of landing the number seven pick. So again, even if they finish with sixth worst record, according to the odds and the percentages here, the Raptors' highest percent chance is landing number seven, their pick, which is 30% chance. That would mean that if it lands number seven, the Spurs get their pick. The next pick selection for the Raptors, again, sixth worst record, is there's a 21% chance that the Raptors pick lands eighth. So again, the top two spots that the Raptors pick most likely lands if they have the sixth worst record is seventh or eighth. And again, if that happens, then the Spurs get their pick in either of those scenarios, because the Spurs get the Raptors pick as long as it lands 7-14 anywhere in the lottery. Whereas if it's 1-6, then the Raptors do get to keep their own pick for this coming draft lottery. And so from there, it's the Raptors' odds, best odds are so it's again, it, I'll just list the odds. So best odds for Toronto is seventh pick, then eighth pick, then fourth, third, second, first, and then sixth. So even though the Raptors might finish with the sixth worst record, there's only an 8% chance or 8.6% chance that they're going to get the sixth pick. So again, if you're San Antonio and you're looking to try to see if you can get that Raptors pick, well, then if the Raptors finish sixth like they're supposed to, then there's a good chance the Spurs are going to end up either with the seventh pick or eighth pick, most likely. If not, unless Toronto makes a big leap into the top four there, like I said, that there's also some chances there, but very minimal chances. So that was kind of what I wanted to do in this episode, was kind of just discuss the Spurs' last four games, and then also the draft lottery scenario, or the lottery race scenarios going into this final week of the season. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Spurs Cast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.